Hello, everyone, and welcome back to E-commerce AI, the Revenue Revolution. Today, we're joined by our very own CFO, Tom Windhausen. In this episode, Tom and our CEO, Dr. Ari Khan, will explore the evolving role of a CFO in a public software company. We'll discuss why traditional financial statements don't tell the whole story and the significance of gross margins. We'll connect the dots between industry backlogs, paybacks, government contracts, and so much more. I'll let you guys dive in.
Okay, great. Tom, it's good to get a chance to learn about money.
Appreciate it. My first podcast vlog here, so really excited to share some content today.
Yeah, good, good. Well, I think that this is really important because if you don't understand the numbers behind a business, you can go the wrong direction, right? And one of the things that I really love about working with you is your history and that you've seen things from different angles and different industries, and you bring that together. And the SaaS industry, I think, has got some unique characteristics. But just to kind of start off and help everybody understand your journey, where did you start off and what are the different experiences that you have?
Sure, perfect. I grew up upstate New York, Syracuse, about 20 minutes south of Syracuse, pretty rural town. Always been a numbers guy. Took accounting in high school, made sure that that's what I wanted to do. Took a computer programming class. Really, yeah. Small high school, so only had one. But it's funny how that numbers and technology stuff came together a couple different times, different companies, and still here in Bridgeline. So I went to explore accounting more in high school. I did something like Junior Achievement, Accounting Explorers Post, really make sure accounting is where I wanted to do. I always been that numbers guy. I went to college at Lemoyne College, graduated with a BS degree from there in accounting. And that was before the 150-hour requirements. So I only had 4 years. Those that are going to accounting now have to do 5 years, get their master's, and if they have 5 years before you sit for the CPA exam.
So, really?
Yeah, that's something that came in play 10-plus years ago, and there's a lot of pressure on the industry to actually remove that because people are not going into accounting because they say, hey, that's another year of college I got to pay for, another year before I get in the job force. So that's really
a good accountants can do that math, and they're like,
maybe the accountants are the ones that can't figure it out. Oh, yeah, so it's put a lot of pressure on industry availability for accountants in current times. But went to Lemoyne College. While I was at Lemoyne, I worked at a company called Oberdorfer Pumps. They were a marine pump and other industry pump manufacturer, so that was great. Worked there part-time and over the summers for 2 years, so got some great experience there while I was still in college. They subsequently were purchased by a couple of roll-ups, but they're now owned by Ingersoll Rand, so really big companies, really big manufacturing, and that's kind of where I started, in that manufacturing space. After college, I got an offer from PricewaterhouseCoopers, one of the big four accounting firms. So I started working there in Syracuse, a couple clients, ConMed, they're a medical manufacturer, CNMD, did a lot of things that the young accounting staff get to do, go inventories on weekends, climb up on oil tanks and do inventories, and saw some really interesting products from really interesting people and companies. Did a year in Syracuse. I transferred down to New York after a year and joined the New York's Retail and Consumer Product Group. So again, was in that manufacturing space, retail space, customers like Duane Reade, which is a big pharmacy here in New York, Danone Yogurt, Unilever, so giant consumer product companies. I did that for a couple years, then moved over to our Long Island office, worked with a couple different set of clients. I worked on Sbarro, Weight Watchers, NBTY, and we'll come back to Weight Watchers. They got an interesting subscription program, which kind of leads into some of the stuff that we'll talk about later on.
And Nature's Bounty, isn't that subscription as well?
Yeah, they are. Nature's Bounty is NBTY vitamins, so that was a consumer product company. So I did that, and then I actually transferred to the Industrial Products Group and worked in Brooklyn on National Grid, which is a gas and electricity provider here in the Northeast. So
that's subscription.
A lot of different experiences there at PwC. PwC in public accounting was great. I encourage people to stay to manager. It's kind of like dog years. The more you can stay in, the more you can advance on the out, you know, as you get out. So I recommend people stay to at least manager. It's really tough. It's tough work sometimes, a lot of hours, but it really pays for itself. And the CPA exam, get that done and get that test early. As you get older, life gets more complex and there's less time out there to be studying for the CPA exam. So get your CPA exam, get to manager and public accountant, and it really opens up a lot of paths forward for you.
So in these different businesses that you worked with, what are some of the core financial metrics that matter? And then let's kind of move that towards what's going on in SaaS companies.
Yep. So if we think about different companies and different industries, I mean, they all have financial statements. But the industry that you're in derives what is disclosed in those financial statements, and you have certain line items on those. So after my time at PwC, I worked at DealerTrack. So that was another technology company. That was my first introduction into SaaS. Like we have here at Bridgeline, we had professional services, and we had SaaS. SaaS-based delivery, and you know, they're really just online tool delivery, right? We have our SaaS products here, including like Search and Hawk Search, and we had that same thing at DealerTrack, offering online tools to better customers, and people pay that on a recurring basis. So if you kind of compare and contrast some of those companies, like here at Bridgeline, we don't have inventory. We don't create products and put them on the shelf and sell them to distributors. But we do have something like deferred revenue, where we have annual contracts, customers pay us a year, and for the entire year, we recognize that revenue over 12 months. So we send the invoice, we collect the cash, and then we have to take that over time. So a company like Duane Reade, which is a retailer, or NBTY, wouldn't have that deferred revenue because you don't go hand in money at Duane Reade and then say, I'm going to come back in 12 months and pick that up.
Right.
So there's no deferred revenue on a lot of the manufacturing company financial statements. Utilities have regulatory assets. We don't have that. I spent some time at Comtech. They had government contracts. You talk about funded and unfunded backlog. So there's really some differences as you go through those financial statements. And then by industry, there's certain things you really can't see in those financial statements, right? So example here, we have at HawkSearch, our customers sign three-year contracts. We send out annual invoices. So we send out that invoice, we receive the cash, we have some deferred revenue on the books, but nowhere in our financial statements can you see that there's going to be an annual billing a year from now, and then the third annual billing a year from then. So those year two and year three of those contracts don't show up on your financial statements, but it's a sign of strength of the company that your customers in long-term contracts, they're going to stay on and use the service for a number of years.
Right. So you have a contractual commitment. So a lot of customers of HawkSearch, for instance, would sign a three-year contract up front that said, all right, at the beginning of each year, pay for 12 months, and then that payment for 12 months, all right, so we collect money there. Or there's an accounts receivable there, I guess that is. But then the second year and third year, they haven't paid. So how would
we haven't billed them, and they haven't paid it, but they have a contractual obligation. Mm-hmm. So it would never show up on your face of your financial statements. So when I talk about the face of the financial statements, we're talking about the balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flow statement. Talk about those as the three statements. That doesn't get captured on there. That would be something that people refer to as backlog. So what is your future expected billings that haven't occurred yet, but you have contractual obligations from your customers for?
Okay.
And to capture that, you're talking about using different KPIs and metrics that also vary by industry.
Right. So on that three-year contract, we would have 1 year as deferred revenue that slowly gets eaten down and turned into real revenue. And then 2 years as backlog. And if you wanted to see the whole transaction itself, what would in a SaaS world, what are some different things that you might do, or some metrics that people might care about?
Yeah, so some KPIs in the SaaS industry, you can go online, you do some research, they're referred to as SaaS metrics, right? So it's some ways for companies to show some strengths that they have in their metrics, the health of themselves, the health of their customers, the health of their business, in items that are not on the face of those financial statements. So you can put them in your disclosures, you can put them in your press releases and earning releases, but they just don't show up on those core three statements. Mm-hmm. So we can spend some time going into our SaaS metrics that we are kind of, you know, major ones for the SaaS industry.
And yeah, what are the most important SaaS metrics, and are there analogs in any of these other industries for any of them that I'd be interested to see?
Yeah, probably the core SaaS metric people talk about is MRR, right? So that's monthly recurring revenue, right? The nature of the business, whether it's a subscription to HawkSearch or a subscription to that monthly pass at Weight Watchers, this is companies like this sell a subscription product, and that revenue is highly recurring. You have a contractual amount. It's the same amount every month. I'm going to pay that to you for 36 months. And that's why you get some great valuations in the SaaS space, because that revenue is seen, it's known, it's highly recurring. If there's weather and no one goes shopping on that day and no one buys a store at a retailer, that revenue doesn't exist. Maybe they'll come back when it's not raining and buy it, or you just had a lost sale.
Yeah.
But that kind of required foot traffic that you'd have in some industry doesn't apply to SaaS, as we have those flat amounts.
Yeah.
So MRR, monthly recurring revenue, is a way to kind of get to apples and apples and compare customers, because it takes out of consideration something like contract term. So if someone said, oh, I signed a $2 million contract. All right, is that for a year? Is it for 2 years? Is it over 3 years? If you kick that down and you divide that in by month, you can then talk about MRR, and then you can compare customers based upon their MRR in a kind of common language way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a base SaaS metric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are some other important SaaS metrics?
So MRR, then you must also hear about ARR. That's just annual recurring revenue. So really, you know, a 12x factor there. Your MRR is 1/12 of your ARR. Lots of other fun SaaS metrics terms. We've got MRR, ARR, NRR, ARPU, CAC, LTV, and we'll go through a couple of these. So we talked about MRR, and then we talk about, so you could have changes in your MRR, right? In any given month, you could have a customer leave, right? And that's referred to as churn, and that's often referred to as a percentage. So I had 100 customers, and I lost 2 in a given month, I'd have a 2% churn, you know, kind of at its basics. There's lots of other movements inside that MRR, right? You have customers that left, but you could have new customers. You could have new customer MRR. You could have expansion of your product by a customer. So your customer adds on a product. You could have, people call that like expansion MRR.
Okay.
You could sell new products into an existing company, so into an existing customer. So it comes down to really how people define their SaaS metrics. It's really important to define them, understand some interesting parts that could be part of your industry or as part of your customer base or as part of your company, define those and apply them consistently. So you really want to have a good tale of history so you can assess your SaaS metrics and know how it tells the story before you would consider, you know, showing them to investors and going through that process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the NRR, net retained revenue, is a quantitative measurement of how sticky your software is.
So if we think about MRR as a dollar amount, it's the amount of revenue you're getting per month. NRR, net retained revenue, that's usually a percentage.
Got it.
Right. So we talked about churn as, you know, being a percentage based upon a customer count, but think about NRR as being a churn or a growth metric based upon your dollars or your MRR.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you could say, okay, I had MRR last month of 100, and I had and customers reduced. I lost 2 from churn, and I had upsells of 3, and then my revenue the next month would be 100 minus 2 plus 3, so it'd be 101. So your NRR is actually over 100. It's 101%. If I compare my current MRR to the prior period, how much revenue did I retain? Over 100%
from that customer base of the prior period. New customers since that prior date aren't part of that.
Right.
Some
people may have it.
They're just acquired.
Right. Some people may have that. You have to look really close at how people define their metrics. But expansion MRR may be different than your new customer NRR. Really, how you want to portray that.
Right.
So a great NRR is over 100. I didn't lose any customers. My revenue actually increased on the same base.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot in retail, people talk about same store sales. So for my stores that existed a year ago, what is the current sales for that same base? And in the SaaS industry, you'd look at NRR, like you'd look at same store sales. For my customers that were here last month or last year, what's my revenue now on that same base.
Okay. All right. What are some other metrics that are important?
Excellent. So next one probably want to talk about is CAC, and that is customer acquisition cost. And it's funny, if you watch Shark Tank, that may be a SaaS metric that you didn't think you knew about, but it's pretty important in the SaaS space. So how much does it cost you to get your customer? So we went through some of those examples. We talked about churn, right? So if I had a revenue of 100 and I had a churn of 2, my revenue is going to be 98. I want to show growth. I got to go find new customers.
Yeah.
So how much does it cost you to go find that customer? And that's what CAC is, your customer acquisition cost. So think about that as your sales team, your marketing team. It'd be their labor, it'd be their commissions. You also could have lead gen costs, you're going to conferences, anywhere where you go out and try to find those new customers, touch those customers.
Yeah.
You could bring that all in and you'd consider that your customer acquisition cost for a period.
Okay.
And then if you want to figure out what your acquisition cost per customer is, you divide that by your number of customers won in the period. So if I spent $100 in CAC, $100 in customer acquisition costs, and I won 3 customers, I'd say my customer acquisition cost was $33 for the period.
All right. Okay. And is that a common metric, your cost per customer?
It is. It's super common, but it doesn't really mean anything on its own. It's just a number. Like, okay, we just said, okay, it's 33. Is that good? Is that bad? How do you think about that?
Right.
Right. And that's a tricky question because each contract's different, right? Mm. I won that customer that cost me $33. Was that customer in a 1-year contract, a 2-year contract, a 3-year contract?
Right.
Are they going to renew?
Yeah.
So you don't know. You got to figure out what that return on that customer is going to be.
Yeah, right.
So you can determine whether or not your CAC is good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You spent $33 to get a new customer. If that customer is only going to pay $20, then you actually shouldn't have even gone out and won that customer.
Right.
They're going to pay $200, then good, do it again.
Right. And someone may think, until you get into it, say, okay, well, I lost a customer. It cost me $33 to get a customer. As long as that customer brings me in $33 of revenue, aren't I back to break even? As long as my income is greater than my CAC, aren't I good?
Okay.
And that really necessarily isn't the case because you have your ongoing costs to support that customer. So you may not want to think about like top line revenue as the number when you're considering your return on your CAC because you have the ongoing support costs and ongoing labor costs to go through. So you want your lifetime value from your contract to be definitely higher than your customer acquisition cost.
Okay.
And a lot of times you can go online, search all the different SaaS metrics, and there's tons of great articles out there on SaaS metrics. Some people say a ratio there of 3 is a good ratio.
Right? I've heard that.
Can your LTV be 3x your customer acquisition cost? And that gives you that 2x in there to cover your overheads and your ongoing ongoing support costs for that customer and to cover that CAC.
Okay. So and for the LTV, so how exactly do you figure out the LTV? So if you're saying that LTV should be 3x CAC, what exactly goes into the LTV?
Right. So LTV is lifetime value of the contract. So in our case, let's think about that HawkSearch contract. It's for 3 years, right? Some people would say, okay, let's just say it's a $1 million contract. I have it for 3 years. Okay, my LTV is $3 million. And again, there's people define it differently, but there's a couple of things to think about before you conclude that my LTV there would be 3. That assumption that it's 3 assumes that contract's not going to renew. So at the end of year 3, our contracts here at HawkSearch have 1-year renewals, and we see customers that are renewing 2-3 times thereafter. So your LTV, you may want to consider the renewals that are going to come in from that customer.
Mm-hmm.
And then also you have different profitability of different contracts, right? Is it a SaaS contract that has a higher margin than if it were a services contract, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So you may not want to think about like top line revenue of really how you're recovering your CAC. You might want to think about your gross margin as the metric to think about when you recover your CAC because that excludes your cost of sales of that revenue. And then so people, if you think of those two metrics, you think about LTV, I mean your value of your contract, and then your CAC, your customer acquisition cost. and the ratio between those. You might want to think about that gross profit as being the metric that you assess. And they call that your, what's your CAC payback period?
Right? All right.
So I incurred CAC of $33 in that example we were using.
Yeah.
We try to get a 3-to-1 ratio. So maybe we want to get an LTV of 100. And you think about then what's your CAC payback period. And that's usually a function of months, right? So if you know what your profitability from a contract is, you know your cost of that contract, you can calculate how long it takes you to recover that cost.
Okay. All right. So if you've got a $33 CAC that is producing, so what, you'd say $3?
$100 contract, maybe that's $70 in gross profit, right?
Okay.
So that you'd, in that scenario, you'd end up with, you know, there's 2x there, so that would be like a 6-month recovery of your CAC? So if you look online, you know, if you can get, for startups, if you can get your CAC recovered in 12 months or so, that's a pretty good start. If you're, the higher your CAC is, the higher your time period to recover. And that's great, you won that customer, but the next day you're out hunting for that next customer and you're incurring those customer acquisition costs again.
Right. Right?
So when you're in that startup space, you want to get your customer acquisition cost as low as possible, get your payback, of course, as short as possible, because the longer it is, the more you're going to eat into your cash as you continue to cover your expenses and your additional customer acquisition costs. Because if it's 12, 18 months before you can recover that cost, you're not going to be net cash positive until you get to the out past that point. And we've talked about that in a couple investor meetings and calls, of the cash flow trough, right? It's really tough for startups to have cash when they have these customer acquisition costs and they have longer periods before they can recover those.
Right, right. So now when you're comparing CAC with the monthly gross profit, right, to get your CAC payback, you've got sales and marketing costs as part of that. You've got your cost of goods sold as part of it, but you don't, that's not the whole story.
There's more. Right. There's all G&A costs, you know, you have overhead, right? So there's definitely costs that are on your income statement that people don't consider CAC, but they're real. So that's what we're talking about. You know, that longer, you know, as you go over that time, you have those actual costs to service the revenue and your overhead costs and your ongoing business costs, rents. Like, people don't really allocate rents into CAC, but it's a real cost. It's a real drag on cash. That's cash outflow that you don't see in CAC, but it does get incurred. It's on your income statement.
Right, right, right. And the whole R&D expense itself, it's not part of CAC and it's not part of your cost of goods sold either.
Right, right. It's costing, you know, to support that, to develop technology, to have new product offerings, and hey, it'll help you make your customers sticky, you offer more features, they're going to renew, they're going to stay. Maybe you can upsell and upcharge them because you have a better offering. So it goes back to that, you know, expansion, MRR, and helping you increase your NRR. But those are true costs, cash costs.
Right, right. Okay. All right. Are those the core metrics? Are there other metrics that are common throughout the SaaS industry?
Let's see, which ones maybe we not have covered. We talked about CAC, LTV, CAC payback, churn. We talked about churn percentage.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the top five that if you went online and you searched for core SaaS metrics that you'd see.
Okay. And I think you said that 3 was a good number for LTV. Is that a general rule of thumb?
Yeah, if you go online and you just Google some of these, you'll see different sources,
right,
saying. But again, kind of circle back to that, yeah, to 3. Kind of,
so if you had 10 LTV to CAC, would that be a good thing?
Let's see. So that is looking at your lifetime value. So mm-hmm. how much you're going to get from your customer being 10 times what's your cost to get that customer. That'd be a great return. For every dollar I spend on acquiring customers, I end up with $10 of cash. Now, again, I have those same expenses all the way down through R&D, but at 10 times, you'll be able to cover your costs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, if you have 10 times, maybe what you want to do is to actually start spending more on sales and marketing, even if it reduces that ratio, because now you can grow faster.
Right, right. The more, if you're getting good return on your CAC, and that's driving great revenue, you can take that extra cash from those great margin contracts that we're saying, invest in even more customer acquisition cost to drive even more leads and hopefully even more revenue. You have that cash flow trough before you recover that, but once you get really rolling in that and you have a great sales process and really have a great way to acquire customers, you're feeding dollars into that customer acquisition cost, as long as you can get great return on the contract, it's a great way to growth.
Okay. All right, cool. Good. I've seen a lot of people have confusion over deferred revenue before. Maybe you could help explain that.
Sure. So deferred revenue is cash that you've received from your customer that you don't have the right to record in revenue yet because of accounting rules and how revenue recognition works, right? So to go back and say we have a, let's just say we have our annual billing of a HawkSearch customer, right? Let's say we have HawkSearch customer $2,000 a month, and that would be a $24,000 annual subscription, right? Mm-hmm. So we'd send a $24,000 invoice to the customer, and that would give us our receivable from the customer. Let's say the customer pays that to us in the same month in 30 days. So I now have my cash. So I don't have my receivable anymore. So I have 12 months of cash, but I've only provided 1 month of service. Right? Okay. So you take that contractual value, the $24,000, divided by the 12-month term, and that's $2,000 a month in revenue. So after month one, I recognize $2,000 in revenue, and that comes off deferred revenue. So your deferred revenue will step down. It'll be $24,000 in month one, $22,000 in month two, $20,000 in month three, as revenue increases on the income statement. You have $2,000 in month one, another $2,000 in month two. So really you take, as the appropriate period of time passes, you take the dollars out of deferred revenue and you recognize them in revenue in the income statement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. All right. Well, where can people learn more about SaaS metrics?
Google.
On Google? Just start Googling this stuff,
yeah,
right?
It's really important in the SaaS industry and, there's a lot of individuals that publish weekly newsletters, monthly newsletters on SaaS metrics and what's going on, hot topics in the SaaS industry. A lot of intro-level articles, a lot of medium-level articles, and then some deeper articles about how you would analyze some of those SaaS metrics. So taking some of the terms we talked about today, putting them into Google, and you kind of get a sense of how they interact with each other, and then you can do research on, what's a great KPI or what's a great metric for this for my industry,
right?
Or you can type industry. If I'm a manufacturing company, what's a great KPI for manufacturing company? What's a great SaaS metrics for this space?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to recap, let's just go over what all the core metrics are.
Right. We talked about MRR, and that's kind of an apples to apple measurement of what your monthly revenue is. And you have ARR, it's a 1 year portion of that, and then so we're talking about our contract amount. So you have your MRR, ARR, and then you'd step up to your contract value. That's your period that you signed for, and the next metric after that is lifetime value.
Okay.
So that includes expected renewals for your customers. That's on the contract side how we step up through those. MRR being a month, ARR being a year, contract value being the contractual term, and then LTV, including expected renewals.
Okay. All right, cool. And then you had a few other ones in addition to those.
So that's your base amounts is your revenue.
MRR, ARR, TCV, and LTV.
Yeah, revenue could go down through, talked about revenue going down through churn. We talked about CAC, which are customer acquisition costs, and what it takes to bring in that next customer, and how much of my revenue cash I have to use to get those next customers in. And then we kind of took some ratios of some of those SaaS metrics, and we talked about CAC payback. So right, there was really the ratio between the LTV and the CAC to get down to like a number of months before you can recover those, how long it would take to recover those costs.
Uh-huh, and that CAC payback was CAC divided by the gross margin of 1 month's revenue?
Yep.
Gross profit of one month's revenue.
You can compare your total acquisition cost to your expected margin from that contract, from that customer.
Uh-huh.
And look at that ratio.
Okay. All right. Okay. So there's CAC payback. Okay, good. And does backlog fall in here anywhere? Is that a different?
Backlog would be a metric, and it's important for a lot of industries, and it's important for SaaS because it's that view into what's the signed contracts that I have on paper, in my drawer that I can't show yet on my on my core financials, my balance sheet, income statement, or cash flow, because I haven't billed those yet, and it's not time to contractually bill those.
Yeah.
So as you bill and you collect cash, it goes into deferred revenue. Deferred revenue goes down over time as you recognize it. And then when you get to month 13, we send that annual invoice again, and we do the same thing we talked about where we have 12 months of deferred revenue that goes down as our revenue goes up. We send that year two contract, same thing starts again. Deferred revenue will come up higher on your balance sheet and then burn down over the 12-month billing term until you send the next invoice.
Cool. Great. Okay. Tom, thank you. I think this is exciting stuff, and a lot of people are going to learn a lot about SaaS metrics here.
Excellent. So we talked about the variability in those financial statements and industry. So really, look at your industry, go online and see what the KPIs are that are important for your industry. Think about what those are. Think about how it portrays the health of your company. Think about how investors may want to look at those KPIs, right? Start tracking those KPIs. You can do it over time. I think you'd want to have a good 24-month view of how your KPIs have changed over time. Right, and then the next step is define those KPIs, because we see variability. And you go on Google and you look at definitions, and you'll see some differences depending on who the source is. Right, so really define that so you're clear to the investors about how you're calculating them, and then make sure that you have applied on a consistent basis, and then you can bring them into your reporting, mm-hmm. share those with your financial statement readers and investors, and that can help portray a version of health of your company and strength of your company over time that you can't just see from those first three statements. The balance sheet, income statement, and cash flow.
Right. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, all. Appreciate it.
Tom, you are a pro podcaster. Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll see you all next time.